to kick him in the ear before hurrying after the others. Twoflower looked at his daughters. "Can they do that?" he said. "Make new ones? I thought it needed carpenters."
"I suppose it learned many things in Ankh-Morpork," said Butterfly.
The luggages clustered together in front of the steps. Then the luggage turned around and, after one or two sad backward glances, or what might have been glances if it had eyes, cantered away. By the time it reached the far side of the square, it was a blur.
"Hey, you, Four Eyes!"
Twoflower turned. Cohen was advancing towards the steps.
"I remember you," he said. "Do you know anything about Grand Viziering?"
"Not a thing, Mr. Emperor Cohen."
"Good. The job's yours. Get cracking. First thing, I want a cup of tea, thick enough to float a horseshoe. 3 sugars in 5 minutes, right?"
"A cup of tea in 5 minutes?" said Twoflower. "But that's not long enough even for a short ceremony."
Cohen put a companionable arm around the little man's shoulders.
"There's a new ceremony," he said.
"It goes, tea up, love, milk, sugar, donut, want another one?"
"And then you could tell the eunuchs," he added, "that the emperor is a literal-minded man and used the phrase, heads will roll."
Twoflower's eyes gleamed behind his cracked glasses. Somehow he liked the sound of that. It looked as though he was living in interesting times. The luggages sat quietly and waited. Fate sat back. The gods relaxed.
"A draw," he announced. "Oh, yes, you have appeared to win in Hung Hung, but you have had to lose your most valuable piece. Is that not so?"
"I'm sorry," said the lady. "I don't quite follow you."
"Insofar as I understand this, physics," said Fate, "I cannot believe that anything could be materialized in the university without dying almost instantly. It is one thing to hit a snowdrift, but quite another to hit a wall."
"I never sacrifice a pawn," said the lady.
"How can you hope to win without sacrificing the occasional pawn?"
"Oh, I never play to win," she smiled. "But I do play not to lose. Watch."
The Council of Wizards gathered in front of the wall at the far end of the Great Hall and stared up at the thing which now covered half of it.
"Interesting effect," said Ridcully, eventually. "How fast do you think it was going?"
"About 500 miles an hour," said Ponder. "I think perhaps we were a little enthusiastic. Hex says..."
"From a standing start to 500 miles an hour," said the lecturer in recent runes. "That must have come as a shock."
"Yes," said Ridcully. "But I suppose it's a mercy for the poor creature that it was such a brief one."
"And of course we must all be thankful that it wasn't Rincewind."
A couple of the wizards coughed. The dean stood back.
"But what is it?" he said.
"Was," said Ponder Stibbons. "We could have a look in the bestiaries," said Ridcully. "Shouldn't be hard to find. Grey, long hind feet like a clown's boots, rabbit ears, tail long and pointy, and of course not many creatures are 20 feet across and 1 inch thick and deep fried. So that narrows it down a bit."
"I don't want to cast a shadow on things," said the dean, "but if this isn't Rincewind, then where is he?"
"I'm sure Mr. Stibbons can give us an explanation as to why his calculations went wrong," said Ridcully.
Ponder's mouth dropped open. Then he said, as sourly as he dared,
"I probably forgot to take into account that there's 3 right angles in a triangle, didn't I? I'll have to try and work everything back, but I think that somehow a lateral component was introduced into what should have been a bidirectional sortilegic transfer. It's probably that this was most pronounced at the effective median point, causing an extra node to appear in the transfers at a point equidistant to the other 2, as prediction in Flume's 3rd equation, and Turf's law would see to it that the distortion would stabilise in such a way as to create 3 separate points, each moving at roughly equal mass 1 jump around the triangle. I'm not sure why the 3rd mass arrived here at such speed, but I think the increased velocity